Want to be a part of the conversation? Then let us know on the TNT Radio Interactive Live Chat Room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Thanks for listening and being a part of the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, good to have your company. There's plenty to get to, and I do have some things to tell you about which I think are really important. Pharmacies have negotiated an extra $3 billion from the Labor government in a peace deal struck after almost a year of protest over the government's 60-day medicine script scheme. That has been going more than a year. And they really came down hard on the pharmacies. We love our pharmacies. I don't know about you, but I love my chemist. I love my pharmacy. And they thought they were badly done by. Well, there seems to have been a little bit of a peace deal. So they've obviously come halfway, which is great to hear. What I can tell you is that the Pharmacy Guild of Australia said today that it had reached an historic deal with the government that would invest billions back into the community pharmacies under an expedited agreement over 5 years, effectively $600 million more a year that will begin in July. $600 million more that will begin in July. So that's really good. And what is really good about this is the fact that, you know, pharmacies do it tough. They don't, you know, at the end of the day, they don't necessarily make a hell of a lot of money. They can be profitable, especially the larger pharmacy chains. They can be rather profitable because they sell everything from medicines to you know, sheets and towels and everything in between. So, you know, they can make a lot of money, but this is something that had to come because they were being nailed by this new agreement. The policy set Labor on a collision course with the Pharmacy Guild, which is an influential lobby group and one of the country's biggest political donors as well. So you don't want to upset the Pharmacy Guild. That is not something that they like doing. Now, I do want to tell you also a little bit of information about China. AI is taking over China in a very big way. And there was an article today that went through some of the ways in Chinese life that AI is taking over already. And you can imagine it happening in China very quickly. But for instance, this is just one example. The mountainous province of Yunnan in southwest China now uses AI inspections at its 621 power substations. It's powered basically by cameras, drones, and walking robots, no human beings. The automatic inspections can effectively and efficiently complete a task in less than 5 minutes, down from the 5 hours usually taken by human workers. From 5 hours to 5 minutes. Now, I wanted to raise that today because if you think that AI is just another fad in technology, you are so wrong. What it can do is cut down a task, a simple inspection task, as China is proving, from 5 hours to 5 minutes. What's it going to do to your job? What's it going to do to my job? What's it going to do to everyone's job? There is going to be a reconciliation of jobs right around the world as AI takes over. Now, I can't see this being all good. I can see it being great for productivity, especially if you're doing things in 5 minutes instead of 5 hours. But I can't see it being entirely good for jobs in the world. And, you know, I don't know about school leavers, but they need to think very, very clearly about what the future holds and how artificial intelligence is taking over the world already in China. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, is the United States intelligence community about to engineer the ousting of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu? Or worse, are they conspiring to have him removed, maybe even militarily? You wouldn't put it past the CIA, would you? Meanwhile, a group of Palestinians on their way to Australia have had their visas withdrawn at the last minute, which is very curious. To get us an update on this and more, including what he's heard from his engaged contacts on the ground in the Middle East. Let's bring in Shane Healy. Shane has worked in the Australian Army as an intelligence officer and trainer, and as a private military contractor too. He was deployed twice to Afghanistan, and when in Australia, he was part of the tactical assault group involved in several real-time terrorist incidents. He now works for both government and private firms in the area of threat assessment, often related to both suspects and those convicted of terror crimes. Shane Healy, welcome back to TNT.
Good afternoon, Chris. How are you going?
Very, very well. Better that you're on now, because I haven't had my fix of what's going on in the Middle East for about a week now, so I'm short of it. So, you know, give us some kind of insight into what's going on. Firstly, the US intelligence community assesses Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's viability as a leader to be in jeopardy, according to its annual report on the national security threats facing the United States that was presented to Congress on Monday. What does that intelligence mumbo jumbo mean?
So if you recall, Chris, we've been speaking for a number of weeks now about how Netanyahu's under investigation in Israel already. And one of his prime motivations for keeping this war going is it's postponing an inquiry into his conduct. So that's a big part of what the US are assessing, that any stalemate or any triggers from members of the Israeli government that are trying to politically overthrow him, they're growing, because what we're not seeing a lot in the Western media is the amount of protests, and the families of those hostages are really starting to get angry at the Israelis for not negotiating. They're seeing that the US, that the Palestinians, that other countries are trying to force Netanyahu to the negotiating table, and all he keeps coming back with is, I'm not giving up until Gaza's free of Hamas.
Yeah, and we heard in the news exactly what he's been saying. He's on the front foot. I have never seen relations between Israel and the United States as bad as they are now, certainly not in our lifetimes. Would you agree?
Yeah, 100%. They're really at a point, and we kind of anticipated this. You know, we said one of the big triggers would be the US election. Obviously, now that is official that it's going to be Trump v. Biden too, and there's a lot of rhetoric around that. And obviously now Putin's getting his talking things up, so it's becoming more and more up to the US, and they're in the middle of an election cycle, so it's complicated times geopolitically.
Very much so. Now, Ramadan is underway. There was this pre-Ramadan anxiety about what may happen during this holy part of the Middle East, and in particular, the suggestion that any kind of killing of Muslims might trigger something worse. But we've had Ramadan start, and as soon as it started, we had 67 people killed in Gaza. Israel doesn't give a stuff, do they?
No, and if you recall, we assessed that very thing. You know, I think you asked me point blank, will it stop the Israelis? And I said no. They've got an end state, and it is to wipe the Palestinians out of Gaza. They don't...
Hang on a second. You're not saying Hamas anymore. You're saying they want to wipe Palestinians out of Gaza.
They want to clear it off. They want to annex it, just like they're doing in the West Bank. They're getting very much more hard-lined, the true believers. But again, the big piece of this is the hostages, which is why we keep, you know, saying that the Palestinian, well, Hamas are going to hang on to those hostages for as long as possible, because that's the only thing that's really keeping the Israelis back at this stage.
You know, there's not much said about the hostages. I was looking around for maybe the latest on the hostages in many of the international news sites today. There was one story which didn't make any, well, it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't breaking news. It's gone so terribly, terribly quiet. And no matter what side of this conflict you're on, the fact that these hostages, these innocent people, are being held like they are and for so long is atrocious.
Yeah, and we said that, you know, I think that would be your words 2 months ago, just after this took place. There was the US, one of the pieces they said is that if Israel pulled back, that Hamas would release 40 hostages. But once again, Netanyahu said no. Like, it's you've almost got three sides to this. You've got the Israeli families that want their hostages and their loved ones back. You've got Netanyahu trying to hang on to power, and then the Hamas and the Palestinians on the other side.
What is the state of Hamas? Are you able to get any kind of decent read from those on the ground in the Middle East about the state of Hamas at this stage?
So they're still very effective. They've still got, you know, over a few thousand soldiers. They've been getting resupplies via Iran through that tunnel complex. You know, they're not going anywhere. You can't, because again, there's no uniforms, no form body. It's not a state group. So to nail down exactly who is a fighter and who isn't, that's the hardest part. So, you know, there's no age bracket. There's male, females. It's all for one. So, but they are still very entrenched. They're still causing Israeli casualties. They're still in the fight, Chris.
And in terms of casualties, I guess at this stage, you'd have to say that half of those hostages would not be alive by now, surely.
Yeah, my information is that they're being treated fairly well, because once again, they're like gold for Hamas. You know, if they go, then what's to say? And with any hostage negotiation, there's proof of life. So that is going on behind the scenes. There are emissaries. It's one of the key things in the negotiations that they won't talk about. But the US are demanding, show us proof of life of the hostages, because they're not, you know, they're pretty well seasoned in these type of negotiations. So why they're not releasing that? Because if they did release numbers and any names, then the family are going to want to know and cause more panic. But those proof of lives, and that is all part of the state-led, US state-led negotiations in Egypt and in other places, Chris.
Where's this heading, do you think, Shane, at this stage? Has it changed direction in recent weeks?
Well, the big key at the moment is the US humanitarian naval fleet. So when that lands in Gaza, the interesting thing will be it's Palestinian sovereign territory under the governorship of Hamas. They are the elected government, so-called, in Gaza. Then so if the Israelis attack the US, well, that's even worse. They're not going to do that. So they're going to have to stand by and watch US forces give that desperately needed humanitarian aid to the Palestinians. Inadvertently, that's going to get to some of those Hamas fighters, because, as we said, we don't really know who they are, the women, children and stuff. That'll get there. And then if that rebuilds some sort of strength, we could be next phase. But it's just the US are the key. I've been saying it all the time. They're trying to make progress. There was another report that we've discussed during the week where President Biden got caught on a hot mic situation, actually saying to another senator that, you know, Netanyahu's getting impossible to deal with. So there's some true frustration in the White House about this.
I bet. And just on this humanitarian delivery, how do you deliver humanitarian aid to Gaza without being or putting yourself in danger, because it's still a war zone?
Yeah, correct. So this would be a landing craft. So it's a boat will essentially land on a beach, ramp will go down, and vehicles will start to employ, and they'll set up. It's obviously in conjunction with the United Nations. There's some what we call advanced forced operations currently in Gaza, setting that up, that facilitation. It's the Americans are very good at this. They've been doing it for 30 years, and the Australian Army has done it too, and obviously in East Timor and the Solomons. And then, again, the key point for this for me is it's not part of Israel. So Israel can't stop them. We've seen in Africa they're going into a very lawless country. I don't think there'll be any stop. The US will get this. The question will be, what will be Netanyahu's triggers? Will he stand back and observe if they start off loading wounded and injured Palestinians onto those US vessels and taking them back to Cyprus? But to me, the next 7-10 days is the landing of the humanitarian aid, and the facilitation of that is the next phase of the conflict.
Okay, I want to talk about something related to the Palestinians who are getting out of the Middle East. I'll do that after a quick break if I can. Shane Healy, our guest, the former Australian ADF intelligence officer. We'll take a break and come back with him once again on TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
In my mind, government spending in the UK is absolutely horrendous. It has got completely out of control over the last 14 years of Conservative rule and 13 years before that of Labour rule. You would probably be astounded if you actually knew how much the government spent. In this financial year, these are the figures, the estimate for how much it wants to spend on everything or how much it needs to spend is £1.2 trillion or £1.2 million, if you like, which is an amount of money that we cannot really comprehend.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio.
One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
The conversation continues.
I don't believe it, and I think that's a terrible position that I am in, that I don't trust my government.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, let's get back to Shane Healy. Shane, what is happening with these Palestinians who were granted visas by the Australian government and then heading to Australia? They've had the visas withdrawn. Now, I know there's a lot of angst occurring in Parliament House in Canberra about the inflated numbers of Palestinians who have been given easy access to Australian territory since the fighting took place. I wonder whether that's got anything to do with it. Do you know why this has occurred and whether there are any political considerations?
Well, I think, and we discussed it a number of weeks ago, it goes back to there's no Australian embassy in Gaza. So who's verifying and then vetting these refugees? Like, how do we know who they are? They don't have passports. They're just applying online. And so at some stage, we discussed this was always going to happen. And it's the usual current Home Affairs Department acting before they think and then trying to play catch up with some legislation. And, you know, without vetting them, we could be getting Hamas fighters into Australia.
Without a doubt.
And I think that's the biggest thing that the Minister for Home Affairs finally woke up to. But on the flip side, they also didn't take into consideration the amount of human resources that are needed, you know, the counselling, the medical assistance, the funds for, you know, interpreters. Where are they going to live? We've already got a cost of, we've got a cost of living crisis in Australia now. We're putting another 1,000 to who and many into that environment. Where are we going to house them? And the other key piece that Home Affairs are saying, they don't feel that, and to be honest, it's quite important, that these people would go back home. And so, yes, they're granting them 12-month visas, but they said we don't believe or trust that they'll return back to Gaza. And the problem is, if it's in the same condition now, they'll just apply for another visa or just go on the run because we're not tracking him to start with. That's the dangerous part of this, Chris.
Yeah, so just correct me if I'm wrong here. Didn't we take, I think it was twice as many that were announced from Gaza, and I think it was 1,300, and then the opposition kicked up and screamed and said, well, hang on a minute, you told us 600 or 800. It's well and truly above that. And then those people, because we don't have the embassy or the consulate, the question mark hung over their heads as to their antecedents and that no one had done the due diligence into their antecedents.
Yeah, exactly right. And I've been part of these, they're called non-combatant evacuations and vetting, you know, conducting risk assessments of these people, you know, whether it be Syrian refugees and such. So none of this is done. So when we pulled out Afghans from Afghanistan to bring them back to Australia, they went to a host nation first where they were given assessments. And if they were verified, if they were given medical assessments, they were given it's called a violent extreme risk assessment. Did they have those ideological beliefs? Could they prove who they were? before they were allowed into Australia. This isn't the case. And I said it at the time. They're literally getting on a plane and landing in somewhere in Australia. Who's meeting them? What vetting's being done? And I think, once again, the Home Affairs Minister, who is out of a depth, has realised this at the 11th hour.
So hang on. You don't have any faith in the Home Affairs Minister?
None. And I've said that here before. Not one bit.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk about Pine Gap now. This is, is it a strictly an American intelligence surveillance base now? Are there any Australians there?
There are Australians that do work at Pine Gap, yes.
Okay. So we've had a break-in at Pine Gap, and it was a break-in, as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, by a podcast team that were out to try and find out how easy it was to break into Pine Gap, right?
Yeah, Jordan Shanks and two other guys. This is a massive black eye, but what it has done, it's brought to life the importance of Australia plays in the Five Eyes intelligence gathering. So it's the largest collection centre for information in electronic means in the Southern Hemisphere. There's a number of 1,000 Americans that work out there. It is very sensitive. There are some very, very highly classified sensors. So this intrusion is very embarrassing to both the force protection measures out there.
How did they get in?
I believe they found a weakness in the perimeter and then worked their way in. It's called a defense in depth. It's a layered approach. And they just slowly work their way through. But the other thing now is, because we have Google Maps and other online mapping things, you can actually get a satellite imagery of the location and look for gaps, you know, via Google and other online tools. So it's not as hard to start looking for penetration points, weaknesses, bushland areas, and then, you know, watch for a pattern of life. How often do the perimeter security guards drive by? Do they have cameras? Do they work? These kind of things. And I genuinely think, from watching the video, they were quite shocked at how far they got.
Yeah, they weren't a threat, but at the end of the day, they've proven, haven't they, that someone who wanted to intentionally see what was going on there could get in. And it's a terrible, terrible lack of security. And you just wonder, because they're in the back of nowhere in the Northern Territory, just outside of Alice Springs, they get a full sense of security, don't they?
Well, I think that, yes, that is part of it. And the government does a very good play by downplaying its existence. They don't bring it up whenever they're talking about AUKUS or the Five Eyes or things of the intelligence nature. They never, ever talk about Pine Gap, even though there was a TV series about it a couple of years ago on I think it was Paramount or Netflix.
Yeah.
But if it genuinely went down, the US would lose 40% of their global intelligence collection capabilities.
Wow.
It is massive, what capabilities it has out there. Yeah.
So that tells me that if you have a plan to bring down the United States at any stage, if you're Russian or Chinese or North Korean or Iranian, part of that plan would be the taking down a Pine Gap.
100%. And that is very much on the intelligence apparatus minds, and especially the Australian Federal Police are tasked with doing the force protection of it. And it is probably one of our most classified installations, apart from a few others in Canberra.
Right. So something's got to be done to kick people in the backsides to prevent this happening again.
Well, you would want to make a very public display of their punishment. And then a number of years ago, when I was still in the military, you would find a lot of protesters would go out there quite often, issue motivated groups, we used to call them, and you know, say, get out US and this is going to cause more trouble. And again, that wasn't very reported on because of its remote nature. Mm. But yeah, it's a lot of Australians probably aren't aware of how sensitive it is or that it exists. I know in 97, when I went out to Alice Springs, I was shocked at the amount of Americans that live out there.
Just quickly, question without notice, the Royal Commission into Veteran Suicide continues in Sydney. It's the last set of hearings for the city and I think for the Royal Commission. What are you hearing about the final hearings?
My two big takeaways are the disgusting display by the Veteran Affairs Minister and the Defence Minister.
Right.
When Richard Marles and Matt Keogh, they just didn't answer any question. And, you know Commissioner Caltus quite well. His tone was quite sharp by the end of it because they either palmed it off to previous government or that's why we supported the commission when it was set up. Well, hang on, you've been in the chair now for this amount of time. What have you done? And, you know, we spoke on this program about 3 weeks ago that Matt Keogh was on 2GB talking about how good the agency is. Well, they had a ex-clearance diver, John Armfield, on talking about how he had to go to the post office and receive the inquest notification of his brother's death. He was an Air Force guy and sat in a car by himself and bought his. And now I know John quite well. And that's disgusting. There was another case yesterday, a sergeant who was in a transition cell and had to deal with a lot of the people, men and women, getting out that had issues. And, you know, you just naturally assume that it's the combat veterans that have this post-traumatic stress. But day in, day out, she was having to deal with other soldiers, airmen, sailors that are broken, and it just wore down on her. So it could probably go on for another couple of years and you wouldn't get to the end of it. I personally want it ended because I want those recommendations before Parliament and I want them implemented. You know, I had another close friend die in a parachuting accident last week, the guy I deployed with. You know, veterans are still hurting themselves. The ADF are preparing for possible operations in China. We need to fix DVA. And that's one of the reasons. Why would you join the army now if you're seeing all these veterans that are broken? Yeah. Why would you, if that's how they're going to treat me when I get out or if I get injured, why do I want to go there?
They wouldn't put their hand up, and that's exactly what they're finding. You know, the Australian government and the ADF are finding that they can't get recruits. Yeah. Okay, I've got to leave it there. I've got to get to a news break. Mate, thank you very much for your time. We'll get you on next week at some applicable point, and we look forward to your company then, mate. All the best.
You too, Chris. Take care.
Good on you. Former ADF intelligence officer Shane Healy, who unpacks everything that we need unpacking from the Middle East and also in terms of military and secret service issues in Australia. Shane Healy. Let's take a break, get you a news update, and then straight after that, we'll catch up with the Queensland Senator Pauline Hanson. This is TNT.
Check this out.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Can you say it?
News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to finish the job in Rafah, saying Israeli forces will storm the southern Gaza city, despite growing pressure to abandon its plans. A small solid-fueled rocket made by Japan Space One exploded mere moments after takeoff in the country's south on Wednesday. And Russian President Vladimir Putin says he is willing to use nuclear weapons if US troops enter Ukraine or Russia's sovereignty is threatened.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Well, the massive news this week that we covered in comprehensive detail yesterday on the program was that England's National Health Service banned the use of puberty blockers to treat gender dysphoria in children. And, of course, you instantly think, as I did yesterday, and I said it quite plainly, that it's got to have consequences for health authorities worldwide, health authorities and governments in particular, who have ignored facing up to the transgender activists. Well, my next guest will have plenty to say about this because she's been attempting to force the Australian government to face up to its responsibility to its children. And yet there seems to be a huge amount of reticence to do so. I wonder whether that will change in light of the decision yesterday. Senator Pauline Hanson was elected to the Federal Senate way back now, 1st of July 2016, as a senator for Queensland. Today, the party she founded in 97 is now called Pauline Hanson's One Nation. In July 2006, The Bulletin named Pauline one of the most influential Australians. I think that is probably still applicable to this very day. Pauline Hanson, welcome to TNT.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me.
How's your illness? You were a bit sick about 4 weeks ago when we caught up with you last time. How are you feeling now?
Yeah, good. I've got sciatica, so that's a constant pain all the time. So it's trying to get that under control. So sleeping at night, it just wakes me up constantly all the time. So I wake up about 10 times a night. So a bit exhausted at the moment, but I'm trying to get that under control anyway. But apart from that, my health's pretty good. Yeah.
No, oh, that's good. All right.
I think of that time. Yeah. But I'm good, okay. Chris, for my age. I'm quite good. A lot of people worse than me.
Very true. How good is this news of England's NHS banning puberty blockers for children?
It's great to hear, but don't think it's going to come to Australia too soon. To see what happens in that Senate chamber with the Labor, the Greens, David Pocock, that's the senator from the ACT, plus also Jackie Lambie abstains from voting, so does her sidekick, Tammy Tyrrell, and about half a dozen of the Libs who are so regressive in this, and I won't call them moderates, they're regressives, that have actually voted against these things.
What is wrong with these people?
They're brain dead, Chris, and I am absolutely curious about this. I've three times, in November 22, I tried to bring in, and a Senate inquiry into it after parents, mothers came knocking on all our doors to speak to us about what had happened to their children because of this puberty blockers and everything they're on. And it was just heartbreaking to hear what happened to the children. So anyway, I then moved to have this notice of motion to have an inquiry into it. And it went down quite considerably. And a lot of them, especially the Libs, abstained from voting. Half a dozen of them, Birmingham, Maurice Payne, Bragg, Smith, Corbeck, Hume, they all voted against it. And they have done ever since. And I've put it up another two times. And it's about the puberty blockers, inquiries, and the last one I put up last year, two up last year, one in March and one in August, and that was about these kids having operations under the 18 years of age, and they still will not support even an inquiry into it.
And yet what we've got now that's emerged from this decision in the UK is clear evidence that we have no idea of the irreversible impacts of puberty blockers. Now, if we don't have any idea, we've got to stop it straight away.
Well, it is. And that evidence has come out in the UK. They shut down Tavistock. And the psychological damage this is doing to the children as well. Chris, there's a lot of things. I think it needs a full investigation into why children are changing this way and this gender dysphoria rubbish that's going on at the moment. Now, I have no problem. I'm sure there are some kids, but I think a lot of them are doing this and changing this way, of course, for attention seeking. Yep. I think that they have psychological problems, and I think they're heading this way because it's okay. They want to be in the group, right? They want to stand out, and it's the wrong way to go. Parents are being controlled that they have no say over their children. If the child wants to go ahead with this, you can't interfere with the child. You lose your rights over that child, especially in Victoria. So and it is irreversible. Now, that's a known fact, yet when I've stated this on the floor of Parliament, the Greens have stood there and saying it is reversible. So they're telling people the wrong, they're telling people lies, that it's irreversible. One mother said she had the daughter who wants to be a boy, and she actually went through puberty blockers. She was around about 17 at the time. Now she's about 21, 22, locks herself in a room. She's going bald on her head. She's actually got hair on her chest, hair on her chin, face, has changed her features completely. She's so depressed that she actually is in bed, won't come out of the bedroom. They have to leave food outside her door. So that's what's done, destroyed this child. These people are actually going to be on the welfare system for the rest of their life. It's irreversible, and we're destroying these people's lives, and yet they are refusing to have an inquiry into it to give the parents the opportunity to explain to us. And it shouldn't be senators, okay? We don't have medical experience background to actually do this. And what we should be doing is getting the experts in. Listen to the experts. Many of them have come out now and said there is psychological damage in what's done. So it's got to be more than just senators or members of parliament, because half of them are so brain dead. They wouldn't have a clue what's being said to them anyway to actually take it in and absorb it. So get the experts who are open-minded about it, and let's let them have their say, the damage this is doing to our children.
That is so obvious. That is such common sense. It's like the nuclear debate. If you think that the nuclear future of Australia doesn't make any sense, have a dam review, have an investigation, talk to the experts and prove your point, Chris Bowen. But they don't want to have a review because they know what the result might be, which is probably based on science as opposed to ideology. And the same applies to gender dysphoria. They don't want to review Pauline Hanson because they'll find out that what they're doing is dangerous and they'll have to upset a minority group.
Well, Chris, they've been pushing about whether you're a male or female, all this transgender BS that's going on at the moment. And I think it's a real shame. It's a breakdown of the family unit. And it's a real shame what's happening to our country. And I hear people all the time, and the older generation mainly, saying, what the hell has happened to our country? Where is it going? And people can't understand, and either can I get so frustrated with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you keep at them, and maybe you just need to raise it again with a little bit more support. Surely what's happened in the UK will start to turn heads at the very least. All right, I want to talk about Coles. Mm-hmm. Coles has begun slapping security tags on meat. This is like the only security tags I can remember in a supermarket have been on those very expensive $40 shave cartridges that us blokes purchase, because once you pinch it, you pinch $40 worth of stuff and it's in the palm of your hand. So we've got shoplifting rates increasing in line with the cost of living crisis, which is telling. A Coles spokesman said the tags were part of a very small trial in only 10 stores in Victoria. Do you see these security measures becoming commonplace before too long?
Depends on how the trial goes, if they lose customers not wanting to go in there, but I have no problem with it. You see, I've had a business as well, and some of my stock used to go because I used to have the the chocolates and that type of thing. I'd noticed that a couple were gone. Shoplifting of anything, of any shop, you know, is a loss to the profits, and you have to work that much harder to actually replace it. The profits have to be made somewhere, Chris, and the public are going to have to pay for it in the long run for these people who want to steal. Excuse me. So anyway, I've got no problem with it. We've seen footage of it on different news programs or on current affair programs of watching people take this meat, take the meat. So it is happening. I've got no problem with Coles trying to do something about it because they've got to sell two or three extra products to actually just make up the cost of losing that product, let alone profits on top of it. So I've got no problem with it.
Okay, now I want to move on to other supermarkets. The Senate Select Committee on Supermarket Prices in General. This inquiry is currently underway and the committee is scheduled to present a final report in May. How's this going so far and is it getting to what needs to be addressed?
Look, there's a lot of things about the cost of living and it's due to government policies and especially the cost of rising cost of electricity. Now, I've spoken to a lot of farmers. A lot of farmers are actually, there's quite a few things that are affecting them. So it's cost of diesel, water, electricity, fertilisers, rates, cartage and equipment. And that's why the cost of their producing these foods are going up. The average farmer is about 55 years of age, so they're actually encouraging and telling the kids, don't bother, there's no future in farming. We are a net importer of food as well, mainly to do with seasonal foods when they're out of season here on fruit and veggies, pig products, and mainly seafood that we import into the country. So by importing these products too, we're actually destroying our own here. They're not getting the right prices for their product either. What we need to do is, Chris, and I fought for the sugar cane growers to get their code of conduct because they were not getting the right prices for their sugar cane. They were controlled by the mills, sugar cane mills. So anyway, when I got them that code of conduct a few years ago, that actually saved a lot of the growers and kept them viable. Mm. What we have to look at with the farmers now, in my opinion, we've got to look at co-ops. A lot of the farmers, and I've spoken to the farmers, this was going back quite a few years ago, he said, they come in and they offer me about 25 cents for my cauliflower. And I said, he said, I've grown the crop. And he said, they come back into near time of picking when they're ripe to go. And they say, oh, we can't give you 25 cents. We're only going to give you 18 cents now. And he said, it wasn't worth me to actually pick them. He said, what I did was I ploughed them into the ground. If contracts are set up, they must see through and they must pay the farmer that price, not being able to change. But because the farmer hasn't got another market to send them to, they can't do anything about it. And then the farmers don't know what they're paying the other farmers. If you had a co-op that the farmers band together, they sent their product through the co-op, the chain, Coles and Woolies, had to pay the farmers a decent price. Why I go on about this, Chris, is I try to fight for the dairy farmers. Yeah. We had 1,500 dairy farmers in Queensland. We've got less than 200 now. They've destroyed the dairy industry because they went through drought times and they weren't prepared to actually pay them a fair farm gate price for their milk. The farmers were actually producing milk for about 40, 42 cents a litre. They were only getting paid 36 cents a litre. So therefore, they've left the industry. And this was because of the bloody National Party and Libs that actually came from the National Party. They wouldn't support the fair farm gate price for milk. And they voted against this. I lost by one vote. So that was the Libs and Nats didn't support this. Labor did at the time. I've gone to them since. It's political games that they play, Chris.
But they're games and they're playing with people's lives and livelihoods.
Yes, correct. And that's why the dairy farmers still need to have that decent farm gate price for milk, and then you give them a 10 cent profit on top of it for every litre at least. The same with the farmers. You have to give them a set price for the produce and the rising costs. Maybe it's a co-op, but I think that we need to address it because I said this years ago, Chris, that we had a monopoly. Coles and Woolies had a monopoly in this country because they share about 80 to 85% of the grocery chain in Australia, and it's wrong. But no one's done anything about it, and they've allowed
them to. This applies in so many aspects of Australia. We don't have enough competitors to get the prices down. You're quite right, and this is a classic example. This is like fundamental reform, structural reform that needs to take place. You're not going to get that out of a supermarket inquiry like this one, are you?
I don't believe you will. And McKim comes out and says, you know, they should sell off some of their operations. Well, what are you going to suggest? Their pet insurance, their car insurance, or what are you going to get them? But Coles and Woolies have to stop getting more share of the market in other areas. They should be limited to it. As I've always fought against them having shares in news agencies or anything like that, or chemists or pharmacies and that type of thing, because you're going to destroy these other businesses. They've got too big. So that's where we have to address the matter.
All right, but the matter could be addressed by the ACCC. Now, I know you'll tut-tut that because the ACCC has let us down so many times, but the ACCC is conducting an inquiry into Australia's supermarket sector, including the pricing practices of the supermarkets and the relationship between wholesale, including farm gate and retail prices. Is there any hope of some kind of a glimmer of hope through this particular inquiry?
I hope so with that, yes, if they do, because the price structure of what the farmer gets paid to what the supermarkets get paid. If we don't do something about it, Chris, we're losing the farming sector and we're not going to have it. And we import food from overseas, but it's not up to the standards or health standards that we impose on our own farmers. So we're going to be eating rubbish, and a lot of the seafood is rubbish that we're bringing into the country. We don't know, or even some of these crops that we bring in, they actually fertilise it with sewage, rural sewage. In some of these countries. Yeah, so...
One last one before we let you go. Australia's recorded the highest net overseas migration in the nation's history in the 2022-23 financial year. We cannot cope with this surge. What about that doesn't the federal government understand?
Because if they didn't have the high immigration, Chris, we'd be in a recession. And they prop up our GDP because of the number of people that we have coming in the country. Productivity has gone down. Industries, manufacturing, productivity, we've lost a lot. And so we're actually paying out more money, $250 plus a year on welfare payments. We have that many in public servants, and we're paying the money. They're not producing anything. They're costing the country money. So productivity is going down. That's why we need industry, manufacturing, farming to give us that productivity. But because we're losing that, in one hand, we're bringing in migrants to prop up the otherwise we will be in a recession. That's why they're doing it. And Barry Jones also said 1992 at the Economic and Population Forum, he said Labor, and he was the president then of the organisation, he said, we actually brought people into the country purely for the vote. So whoever they bring into the country is purely actually to prop up the Labor vote. That's another thing too, of where they bring these people from.
Yeah, very, very true. You'll be doing something about that next week?
Chris, I'm trying to deal with a lot of issues there. Immigration has been on my agenda even from my maiden speech in 1996, and it was only because of my pressure on Morrison that the Liberal Party pulled it back from about 260,000 to 190,000. So they had to do something about it. But it's over the top now. Apart from what they're bringing in the country, and it's about 1 million people, because we've got over 750,000 foreign students in the country. That's on top of the others that we have with the migrants coming in. So we can't cope with it. That's why the housing shortages in most of the states, your housing rental accommodation is less than 1%. We haven't got the housing for people. We haven't got the hospitals, nursing homes, schools. Everyone's struggling. And it's hard. And the traffic, I'm sick and tired of driving in this horrendous traffic. You're probably laughing at me because it's Brisbane, but it's worse in Sydney, Melbourne, but it's horrendous wherever you go in this country. And I blame the bloody governments for this. This is Labor. It was started under the Liberal Party. Until we get our act together and can provide the infrastructure for our standard of living and decent way of life in this country, don't keep bringing more people into this country.
Well said. Pauline Hanson, I'll let you go. Thank you very much, and thank you for your generosity of time.
Thanks, Chris. Bye. Bye.
Great to have you on the program. Thank you. Pauline Hanson, Senator, Queensland Senator for One Nation, her own One Nation party, of course, that she founded way back in 1997. Good to have her on the program. If you've got something to say about all of that, we've put some issues on the agenda today. A fairly buzzy kind of show. You can jump on our talkback lines from the United States or Canada on 1-888-201-6425. Love to hear from you. From the UK, 0330024-1026, or from Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Let's take a quick break on TNT.
Right now, the forgotten poor are waiting for healing and care, for life-saving medical care, for a chance to live with dignity and hope. They are waiting for Mercy Ships and you. Mercy Ships is the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. And now, as our newest state-of-the-art hospital ship sets sail, Mercy Ships will double our ability to reach children and adults who need us now.
Without the work of Mercy Ships, these patients don't have another option.
Mercy Ships is answering the call to serve suffering people who have nowhere else to turn. Together, we are going to some of the world's most desperate places and bringing a wave of hope and healing to those who need it most. To learn more about this wave of hope, go to mercyships.org today.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, when they would otherwise be lost, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love, to protect them and their threatened natural habitats. See how you can help animals and people thrive together at joinifall.org.
Focused on the facts. Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
There you go. I cannot believe it's so close to news time, and I'll be leaving you in other capable hands in just a short moment. But this case, the case of the disappearance of Madeleine McCann, has captured the imagination of the world. And whenever I see a development or a piece of breaking news flash up anywhere, I am so keen to find out what it involves. Now, you probably know there's now a top suspect, and the top suspect is Christian Bruckner. There are people going into bat for Christian Bruckner, despite the fact that he is a convicted pedophile. I find it difficult to go into bat for anyone who's a convicted pedophile, even if he had nothing to do with Madeleine McCann. But anyway, so police are hunting a man they believe holds vital information on missing toddler Madeleine McCann and is connected to pedophile and top suspect Christian Bruckner. Armed police in Germany raided a small house on the Kennelblick allotment in Braunschweig, Lower Saxony, last week, spending an hour outside the property owned by a man named Ralph H. Ralph H. could provide the key, according to German police. The 56-year-old is alleged to have worked closely with Bruckner, who is being treated as a prime suspect in Madeleine's disappearance in Portugal in May 2007, with the pair renting allotment homes back-to-back in the Kennelblick site. So they lived very, very close together. Ralph, a longtime pal of the sex offender, vanished before police arrived, sparking a manhunt for him. So they got to their raid, but he was gone. Before he disappeared, the man reportedly spoke about robbing homes with Bruckner, who is currently on trial over five sex crimes in Portugal, mind you, and drove a number of his vehicles. I acted as a lookout for him during burglaries and as a getaway driver as well, Ralph was recently reported as saying. I know exactly the sort of crimes he got up to and what he did on the dark web. Now, informants within the BKA, that's Germany's equivalent to the FBI, say they urgently needed to speak to him about his relationship with Bruckner. It's understood Ralph is not a suspect in her disappearance, Madeleine McCann's disappearance, but may have information which could help investigators, but he is very much on the run. He's not at home, according to a detective. He doesn't answer the phone, and he's apparently disappeared. Prosecutor Hans Christian Wolters said he's a neighbour who could be interesting to talk to, but we can't give out any details on operative matters. Neighbours described the quite frightening scenes of officers in helmets and bulletproof vests jumping over the fence of the home before calling out Ralph's name. A neighbour, Anja, said, I saw the officers turn up and totally, really quietly, there were probably 8 to 10 of them. It was quite frightening suddenly seeing them creep in with their helmets and bulletproof vests and jump over his fence. The officers later asked me if I had any idea where Ralph could be. It was about midday and I thought he was out working, but it turns out he hasn't been seen for nearly a week now. Meanwhile, Bruckner is currently behind bars after being convicted of raping a 72-year-old American woman in 2005, just a few kilometres from where Madeleine McCann, then aged 3, would disappear 2 years later. So the argument from police is that this is his stomping ground. As I say, they've got no real evidence to pin on this bloke. So in the sober light of day, they probably should get off his back. But I find it really, really difficult going into bat for a serial pedophile like Bruckner. I don't know whether you've got the same difficulties, but I certainly do. Now, very quickly, this is interesting. There's a major overhaul of exams in New South Wales, education exams. This is interesting. The state school standards boss has today flagged a major overhaul of the HSC that could include digitised exams and a rethink of the use of essays. You know, I remember my daughter when she was in year 11, she's left school now, but she was in year 11 and they had things digitised in terms of exams. And when the server went down, their whole exam was ruined. So much so they'd seen some of the questions. Some of them had answered the questions. Others hadn't answered the entirety of the question. So it was so contaminated, you couldn't give the same test to the kids 2 days later. When the server got up and working again, they had to redo the whole exam. And it took them 2 weeks before they sat again. So it's one thing to say that things could be digitized. And of course, it makes sense that they would be digitized for school exams. But as soon as something technically goes awry, as we know only too well right here, well, you can come a gutser and things can be ruined grossly. But the state school standards boss has flagged this, and the New South Wales Education Standards Authority Chief Executive Paul Martin backed the release of more data on student performance at schools, but cautioned against anything that could be used to form more league tables to rank schools. Speaking to the Herald School Summit on Thursday, Martin said he wanted to see a modernisation of the HSC, which has not faced major changes in about 23 years. I definitely believe we need to reform and make some changes to the HSC. The patterns of study, the number of subjects, the number, timing and style of assessment tasks, the number of HSC exams, the amount of essays in exams. All of those things probably need the board to systemically have a think about over the next few years. Martin said stress levels among HSC students were rising despite attempts to reduce the number of assessments. He said this made exams more high stakes, while he knew of students memorising entire essays. Wow. Memorising entire essays. When I think back, I couldn't have done that. I just wasn't that committed. That's just how I approach school. It will be what it is. Anyway, I've been lucky. I'll get out of here and hopefully you'll come back for one more time tomorrow at the same time. Let's do that, eh? Right here. This is Chris Smith on TNT.